welcome everybody to another episode of Yankees and Gravy. This is Yankees and Gravy, the episode for 6-10, June 10th, 2015. Thank you everybody for joining. It's a very, very, very good time to be a Yankee fan, at least currently right now. We've learned about this team all year long. We've had some slides, it seems to be a streaky team, and we are in the middle of one of those upside streaks. I'm still waiting. I think a lot of us might be waiting for us to be able to show a little bit of consistency. Everybody loves to put together, you know, 7 out of 8 wins, 6 wins in a row, 7 wins in a row, all that stuff, back-to-back sweeps. We all want that. If we can avoid, you know what I mean, those 6 out of 7 losses, and sometimes this year we've proven to be playing equally bad as we have good. Now, call me the cynical Yankee fan when I say something like that, because it kind of seems like maybe I'm just waiting for the other shoe to drop. But, you know, we all have to kind of measure how we all thought this team was going to be at the beginning of the year. They started out like crap. They came on like gangbusters and won a whole strung of a whole bunch of wins together. Then the bottom seemed to fall out, and I'll say it was like it's a long memory now. It's far removed from it, but a couple of weeks ago we were looking at one of the worst slides we've had in a while. I don't remember what it got up to, 7 out of 8 losses or something like that, 8 out of 9 losses. But we were doing very, very poorly. The rest of the division was as well. So it ended up being, you know, not too hurtful for us. But either way, going forward, here we are. We're in the midst of a 7-game winning streak. And I wanted to touch on the NBA Finals real quick. You know, like we say, it's Yankees and gravy. So here's a little gravy. What an amazing thing this guy, LeBron James, is doing. The debates are out there. I still am not ready to relinquish the GOAT title to Jordan. The greatest of all time to me is Michael Jordan. And I'm going by this guys I've seen play, and that's basically, you know, Magic Bird era and going forward. I look at these athletes and I watch their press conferences and I watch their demeanor on the sidelines. I watch their social media stuff, and I just feel like, you know, there's a little bit of a killer instinct when you look at a guy like Kobe Bryant, when you look at a guy like Michael Jordan, what you see is, and that's the word that's used most, is assassin. The guy is not worried about what he's wearing in a press conference. The guy's not worried about, you know, how he looks. The world is watching you when that buzzer hits signals the end of the game, and what's going to be your move, what's going to be, I don't know. For me, a guy like LeBron James, through most of his career, it's always seemed like he was acting, he was manufacturing emotion, the whole thing where they got, you know, they dressed up, and he just seemed like a little level of immaturity. And I think that kind of goes a lot with this whole generation, with the social media, the outlets that they have out there. When you're under the microscope, in the fishbowl, everybody's watching you all the time, maybe that kind of creates it. So maybe it's not his fault so much, but I always felt as though, you know what, Michael Jordan was not interested in what anybody thought, period, or even how he looked while he was out there. No accessorizing in his uniform, nothing like that. He had a look in his eye, and he was out there to step on your neck and beat you at any cost whatsoever. To be honest, I don't know, man. If LeBron wins this, I'm not going to say he's better than Jordan, but in my eyes, he's going to be a little closer to that. A couple more seasons like this, I mean, what he's doing is ridiculous. He's averaging 40, 12, and 8 in the first 3 games of these finals, knowing full well they don't have a team around him. God bless Dela Badoba and, you know, some of the role players that are, you know, busting their ass and doing their best. But I don't know if there's a worse. If this team wins the finals, I don't know if there's ever in history, if it was won by more of a, I guess, single-handedly by LeBron James. And you have to take your hat off to him. And I wanted to touch on Steph Curry while he's kind of, you know, getting into his rhythm and coming into his own as a superstar MVP. And he has been ice cold here and there. throughout the first couple of games of this series, but at the end of the games, you're never safe with this guy on the court. He can throw it up and bury a three, these wacky, off-the-wall, you know what I mean, like horse type of shots. He's fading away into the corner, guy in his seven-footers in his face, coming off picks left and right, and he's draining these threes. Yeah, he's got to, I think he's got to come together and he's got to get a little more consistency in this series. But at the end of the game, I don't care. The way he can put up threes and the rate at which he can throw up threes and legitimately have a good shot of it going in. We're not talking about throwing up prayers here. They look like prayers, but in his hands, they're not prayers. And he can bury these things at the end of the game. He could erase a 12-point lead in the blink of an eye. All right, basketball, enough of it. I don't know enough about basketball. I don't know. Who am I kidding? I don't know enough about anything to be even on this freaking, microphone right now talking to you guys. But, again, we do our best. We do love the Yankees. I do follow them, and I do have a big mouth with a lot of opinions. So if you're listening to this podcast, you're going to get them. Tanaka had a showdown tonight, a big matchup with our buddy Scherzer. The multicolored-eyed bandit. This guy's, this is, you were looking forward to something like this. A good team. While, the Nationals are not playing up to, how everybody maybe thought they would play, they're still a good team. And they're always a good team with this beast on the mound named Scherzer. So he comes out, and we know him from Detroit and how dominant he could be. And, all right, so Tanaka, second game back. The guy, he won. The guy flat out outpitched Scherzer, one of the best pitchers in baseball right now. We've talked a lot about Tanaka. He's been one of the main controversial subjects. I should know this by now, but I don't know how. I gotta see what his contract is, and you guys probably know, and you're probably listening to this right now, being like, "How do you not know?" I gotta know what his contract is, but I only bring that up to say I don't know how. I don't understand this whole Tommy John thing. I think the next time this guy gets hurt, I think you got to shut him down. Because it must be driving me out of my freaking mind. Every freaking time this guy pitches, I'm watching his face to see if he's in pain. Everybody, including the Yankee front office, say, or at least hint at the fact that it's likely this elbow is eventually going to blow and he's going to have the Tommy John surgery. My response to that is, why the hell are you not doing it now? Because now you're not getting any longevity out of him. You're not getting any consistency out of him. And if you think this is inevitable anyway, then why you're already, a year and a half into his tenure here as a Yankee, why, go another year and a half like this? I'm assuming, what did he get, a 5-7-year deal? Why just knowingly go into the back end of his contract, knowing you haven't won with him yet? Why would we basically just risk it versus shutting him down now, fixing him, and then knowing you'll have a good, whatever it is, 3 years or so with a healthy Tanaka versus just rolling the dice and possibly losing him for the last 2 years of his contract? I don't know. Having said that, I don't think you shut him down. I don't think you give him the surgery now while he's pitching like this. All I'm saying is that the very next sign of anything remotely close to that elbow, give him the surgery. You know what I mean? Get it over with. It's going to be a year and a half, and let's just deal with that and have some peace of mind just like they have with Harvey now. Yeah, going in, you're like, shit, it's going to be friggin' year and a half without this guy. But as far as Harvey goes, knock on wood, you never like to see people get hurt, even though I am no Metropolitan fan. The stuff's in the rearview. The Tommy John's in the rearview. He's healthy. There's no reason to expect anything to go wrong from him. There's no reason to expect anything other than what's looking like an all-time great Met pitcher from here on out to go along with that. I mean, damn, what a staff they have, those Mets. So it's frustrating. Not frustrating. It's the word is jealousy. I mean, those guys, you don't have to even hit too much with those guys. You got to average, 3-4 runs a game with those guys, top to bottom, 1-5. That's going to be a good pitching staff for a very long time. And then Wheeler's going to come back. Forget it. What else do we want to cover here? We're in first place by 2.5 games, so things are looking good. Again, we all looked at this team on paper. We all look at this team right now. It's a nice, solid team. You can't help but, I guess, be a little bit hesitant, you know, to really go in and start, you know, like us Yankee fans. I say it to my friends. I'm a Yankee fan. What that means is that I am absolutely entitled to expect to win a World Series every year. Can't say that the last couple of years because, you know, even though we don't always win every year, we seem to be in it every year and we can kind of expect it. We haven't even been, you know, really, I guess, serious contenders in the last couple of years, for a World Series at least. This year, I want us to get back to that. But you see what's going on, and you look every day and you watch this team, who's getting hurt, who's not, who's playing well, who's not, who's getting hot and able to stay hot, how's the pitching looking. Man, all things are looking good so far, knock on wood. 2.5 games in first place. So maybe this is the beginning of us being able to get a little bit of separation. I don't know. Again, do not want to speak too soon on that. Another thing I wanted to talk about was Brian McCann. I think he's one of the keys, guys. I think he's one of the keys to us kind of being in the mix. Every team, you know, the real good baseball teams are not so top-heavy with these, you know. Teixeira is playing like a, you know, MVP candidate this year. You know, the idea of a baseball team is not to stuff a bunch of stars at every position. It's to have good role players. This guy's always been a good defensive catcher, but we were all disappointed in his start last year, definitely, and his overall numbers. He did come back a little bit nicely at the end of last year, but at the end of the day, when it's all said and done, the body of work was not where it needed to be for Brian McCann. He is producing well this year, and I've been, you know, the guy who is the proponent of traditional baseball and stats and this and that. And I don't want to, you know, send mixed messages. I do have a problem making all those crazy, you know, acronyms, stats, official stats now, where I'm supposed to know what a WAR is and what a, you know, all these. I don't even know the acronyms. We do this every week. We talk about this every week. But baseball is a numbers game. And numbers are what makes it is, because there's so many players, there's so many teams, so many games, so many years. It's the history. So that's the, really the way people throw. It's a beautiful thing, actually. It's like, you know, basketball and football, I think, is more the eye test. Baseball, you know, when you look up, oh, who's better than who? Who's better than this guy? Who's all right, well, let's go look at the numbers. And you could pull up the numbers and have some really all-time classic debates, drinking some beers with family and friends and pulling out these stats and really kind of, you know, baseball, the numbers are important. So this is getting a little deep with Brian McCann. One thing he noticed was that last year and mostly last year and for most of his career, actually, he was noticing that he was popping up a lot. Popping up way more than the average Major League Baseball player. I guess they said over the course of a set amount of years, there was, you know, maybe I think 500 players or so that had a qualifying number of at-bats where they deemed the statistics to actually hold weight. And he was below the halfway mark. So he was, despite being a good hitter and a productive hitter in Atlanta, and, you know, They say that he was popping up at a rate that was above average, and if he could work on that, he'd probably be a lot better. He got with our old buddy Kevin Long, who's now across town with the Mets, and tried to work on his swing. A couple of things they were working on was adjusting the plane. If you know, one of the things they'll teach you, and I've been a little fascinated with baseball swings lately, and I've been kind of like studying, you know, different stars, I guess superstars, swings, whether it's past or present, you know, and how, you know, different philosophies and the commonalities that they have within the most successful guys and what they do. One thing that these guys teach and some coaches teach and make sure and they feel it's important is that you have to keep your hands through the zone, and the plane in which you bring your hands through the zone will cut down your margin of error, meaning that if you can swing through the zone and that bat and your hands stay through that zone for as long as possible, You know, your eyes tell you where you want the hitting, where you want to, what level you want the bat to go through at. Now, if you start that swing and get those hands through that zone for an extended amount of time versus chopping down or swinging up or whatever it is, to where maybe the idea is to have impact and be in the zone upon impact of the baseball. If you really concentrate on bringing your hands laterally through the zone, you will have more, the bat will spend more time in that zone, and that will cut down your margin for error, so that even if you are a little bit late or a little bit early, you know, and you're, and we're talking about, you know, fractions of a second here because of how the speed at which these pitches and these swings are happening at. But if every fraction of every second counts, and if your hands and bat and stuff can stay through that zone a little bit longer, a fraction of a second longer, you have a better chance of putting the bat on the ball. And, you know, will you get a good piece of it? Maybe not. Maybe you won't have, like, you know, maybe you won't have all your power behind it, or maybe it'll be an opposite field. Maybe you'll break your bat. But you will cut down on your strikeouts. And the theory is if you cut down on your strikeouts, your average will go up. Your on-base – good things will happen. Your on-base percentage and batting average will go up. You'll force the defense to, you know – make plays, basically, and, you know, strikeouts, nobody will. Strikeouts are unproductive. We can all agree on that. Leaving the hands through the zone and letting the bat be in the zone for a longer period of time over the plane, and I guess that's a theory that he's been working on. And he's also, I just know this from watching the games, I noticed that, you know, they're starting to shift, and the shift is going crazy. You all know how much I hate the shift, but it seems for now it is what it is. They're starting to shift on him as well, and he made it a priority this offseason to make himself a little bit more shift-proof, or let's say shift-resistant, so they can't just basically, you know, come on, bring everybody to the, you know, first base, second base side of the infield. So he's been working on spreading the ball out a little bit more, and you could see him. He did it tonight, actually. He had a borderline gapper. I don't think it hit the wall, but he had a gapper today. And that was an opposite field hit. He went with the pitch beautifully. He loved it. But now, through all that work, he's, you know, with Brian Long and putting that stuff into practice, he's 25. He's ranked, this is crazy that they have these stats. He's ranked 25 in not popping out. So out of all the hitters, you're talking about hundreds of hitters in baseball, he's number 25 in not popping out. Whatever that's worth, but it's good, and it seems to be good. It seems to be the proof is in the pudding because he is producing more. I'm not the biggest. I'm a Yankee fan, even more so than a baseball fan. I'm not gonna lie to you guys. I don't know if I don't know how you want me to be brutally honest. I don't play fantasy baseball. I'm a Yankee freak. I love the Yankees. I know baseball, but I'm not. You're not gonna catch me watching, you know, Devil Rays Royals on a Saturday 5 o'clock Fox game. It's just not me. I'm sorry. So because of that, I don't necessarily need to see every baseball game in every level. So I don't necessarily get into this draft too much. But because it is the Yankees and it is the draft, and these guys are the future guys that ideally will be seen in a couple of years, I did do a little bit of research into who we picked for our first two picks. First guy is out of UCLA. He is a pitcher, right-handed pitcher named James Capriolan. How do you say it? Capriolan? I don't know. Sorry. I truly apologize about that. I know I sound like a moron when I'm trying to say this guy's name. Capriolan, whatever it is. He's a righty. He's 6'4". He actually considered coming out of high school when he was younger. He's for a California guy. And when he was going to do that, he was projected to be a third-round pick. He took the risk of, you know, he really wanted to go to UCLA. So he did, took the risk, went in, and actually decided to pitch 3 years at UCLA. And that was a great, great move for him because he's a junior now. He's going to come out, and he's at 21 years old, and, you know, they knew he was going to go in the first round. What pick was he? 18, I think. One of the teens. 18, I think. Now, this is an interesting pick because he's not a flamethrower. You know what I mean? He's considered an under-the-radar pick. he's got a lack of velocity. He really, his fastball right now is topping out at like 89 to 92. They love his command. I watched some video on him. I'm watching him pitch. What I think you're going to be dealing with is a sneaky 92. When he has to dial it up to 92, who knows too? Maybe they, you know, work with his mechanics and get a couple of more miles per hour out of him to where he can get up to 93, 94. But even if he doesn't, at 92, if he could dial it up that high, the way he pitches, especially from the stretch, there really is not a lot of wasted motion. He's very, very slow and deliberate to the plate. And then all of a sudden, the ball kind of explodes with a tremendous, you know, last-minute burst of late power and a strong follow-through. So I guess that he has that going for him in terms of speed. But beyond the speed, he's got a good changeup, and he has just total and complete command. And we all know, you know, people like Mariano, people like Maddux. Well, Mariano was a flamethrower too in the beginning of his career, but people like Maddux never really threw that hard. But just to be able to put the ball wherever you want to is huge. And yeah, I say the same thing. That's great, but the guy only throws freaking 89 to 92 miles per hour right now. That's one of those things where I'll say, you know what, the strength of the Yankee scouting and front office army, I'll probably defer to and admit that they probably know a little more than me about this, but we'll see. I guess the good thing is about it is that also maybe the thought process is getting all these flamethrowers lately, they're all getting the Tommy John within the first couple of years. How many of them? It's almost like a rite of passage. You got to get the Tommy John, and then you breathe easy, and you go in, and you know, you have yourself a great career. Maybe this is a way to avoid that by getting a guy who doesn't rely on, you know, throwing 98, so he doesn't have to worry about blowing his arm out. That could be it. They say he's got a slider and he's got a curveball, but if he wants them to really be effective, he's got to work on them. They're not pro ready, not even major league ready, not even pro ready yet. He has to do better. But his fastball is very good. He's got good command. I mean, his fastball is very good as far as location and command, and he's got a nice changeup. Interesting profile for a guy you're going to pick at number one. Another guy, the second guy we picked is also kind of interesting. We got him at pick number 30. He's out of San Diego State, also 21 years old. His name is Kyle Holder. He's a shortstop. Now, this guy is interesting because the only reason we got this pick is because of compensation for losing David Robertson. And so this guy's a lefty. He's a defensive specialist by far, no doubt about that. He's also, interestingly enough, he's a shooting guard, and he was going to play that in college as well. I think he actually did, but the baseball seems to be taking over, and he's doing that full time now. Scouts have been have had a level of concern about his bat, which is weird because the guy hit 350 and had over a 400 on base percentage. Doesn't look like he's a power guy, but you never know. You don't have to be too much of a power guy to hit home runs in Yankee Stadium. But again, doesn't seem like he's ever going to be the 25 home run guy. But in that stadium with some adjustments as a shortstop, if he can get 8 to 10 home runs a year out of him, that's a plus. But either way, I'm digressing because the offense right now isn't what this guy is about. They say there's basically no chance that this guy is not a surefire, real-deal guy at shortstop. The range is there, the arm is there, the hands are there. And again, another situation where, I mean, the scouts, they must really know their craft because the guy hits 350, 400 on-base percentage, and they're telling you he can't hit. As of now, he needs a lot of work hitting. I don't and we got him basically for David Robertson. David Robertson, I know he was very, very solid all year last year, didn't blow saves. Let me tell you something. If you watch the Yankees and watch this guy, he didn't blow saves, and he pitched basically last year was probably the least pressure that was on any Yankee closer in history. The guy was out there. He was just kind of dealing. I like him. He's a solid pitcher, but I think he was definitely overrated. I wasn't hell-bent on keeping him. And anytime there was a big moment, and it culminated like we talked about with that Jeter thing, and thank God David Robertson choked, because then we were able to kind of have the Yankees blow that game, which set up that big Jeter moment of him hitting that walk-off single, which may or may not have been served right up to him on a platter. Who knows? But David Robinson, I never was sold on him, and I think he's doing. I think he's having an okay year. I definitely saw SportsCenter a few times where he's blown a couple of games consecutively. He can give up the home run all the time. I am worried about his psyche. Come on. Are we really comparing, you know, little David Robinson with, you know, the fragile kind of mindset versus these two trees we have who are dominating in our bullpen right now? That was a good move. That was a smart move by the Yankees, and I'll be the first to admit I've complained about a bunch of their moves. Cashman is, you know, me and Cashman battle a lot. Not that he knows about it, but, you know, on this podcast or whatever. But this was a great move, and David Robinson is gone, and it seems like we may have a chance of having some pretty good compensation for him in the form of a one Kyle Holder. That's about it. I don't know if you follow me on Twitter, Yankees and Gravy on Twitter. Listen, I'm an asshole. I'll give you that a little bit. And, my personality hasn't really – I'm still trying to get warmed up and comfortable on these podcasts and stuff like that. Ideally, I'm going to try to be a little bit more offbeat and irreverent and a little bit more myself, and, you know, which is basically a little bit of a smart ass too. You probably caught a few glimpses of it. But I'm on Twitter yesterday, and I see David Robinson – I'm not David Robinson. Kurt Schilling was on and – the draft, everyone knows the draft happened, and he said something, I'm going to paraphrase it, congratulations to the men who became professional baseball players yesterday, gave him quick little advice and ended it up with saying, and always remember, respect the game and play the game right. And he just seemed like the most, and again, he's not out of line at all. He made a tweet. He's an elder statesman in baseball. He is in a position to say something like that, but I'm a freaking smart-ass jerk-off Yankee fan. And I read him saying that, and all of a sudden, no matter what, I think of Kurt Schilling. I think of him on the Diamondbacks. He got us twice, man, this guy. He got us twice. He got us in the Diamondbacks, and then that freaking bloody sock. Ugh, that drove me nuts. So just to be an asshole, I tweeted at him, so he, like I said, he ends it with, and always play the game right. And then I tweeted at him, and when you put ketchup on your sock, make sure it's Heinz 57. Total troll comment, total asshole comment. Never thought he'd freaking see it in the world. Never thought he'd give a crap about it. Just me being, just being a Yankee fan and throwing a dig in there. And he actually came back at me and said, it doesn't matter what's on your socks, something like to the effect of what's on your socks when you have these, and he posted a picture of a bunch of rings. I thought that was funny. Then my friend got involved and I was like, all right, let's go after Mo Vaughn now. And we said something stupid to Mo Vaughn. But that's not really my style to start trolling people. I'm, like I said, a smart ass on here. I'll speak my mind. I'll try to, you know, entertain myself and maybe hopefully a couple of people along the way with some stupid comments, but I didn't necessarily mean to, I did mean it, but I didn't think it would be on his radar, but it was funny. And then it's funny because a bunch of people retweeted his comment after that, and I was on there. But check it out, it's Yankees and Gravy on Twitter. If you wouldn't mind, check out Yankee Gravy at Facebook. It's Yankee Gravy, not Yankees and Gravy, because I'm still going with the, friend page as I try to develop the contacts and, you know, followers, fans, whatever you want to call them. I do have a Yankees and Gravy fan page, but it's not really being used. Yankee Gravy, and I had to do Yankee Gravy. I couldn't do Yankees and Gravy because they know that's not a Yankee. If you see the word and, they know it's not a person. For some reason, I guess Facebook thinks Yankee Gravy is a person, but Yankees and Gravy wouldn't be a person. If you can find that on Facebook. And it's, if you have anything you want to say, tell me I'm an asshole. Or if you have any questions, tell me I should freaking know what the hell Tanaka's contract is before I freaking decide to do a Yankees podcast. All that stuff. Hit me up on yankeesandgravy@gmail.com. And I think that's about it. All the podcasts, if you could check me out on iTunes and Podomatic, if you could subscribe and comment, that would be hugely helpful to me. So this is it. So what did we do? We did starting to get a little more consistent, guys. We got the microphone back. Yanks are playing well. Yankees and Gravy episodes are coming out. Life is good. Thanks for listening, guys, and we'll talk to you next time.